Blog Talk Radio.
Another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, it is always wonderful to be with you. We are some serious times, family, as you all, I am sure, quite aware of. But, as you are also aware of, some of us are here to do the work that now is necessary to be done. Apologetically, by any and all means necessary. Indeed. Welcome to this segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. And that, of course, was the African Orchestra. Yep. We're going to be playing for you as we proceed some real kinds of powerful music, rhythms, arts, things of that nature, because we know that these are some of the things that help feed the spirit. And we definitely need that nowadays because there's so much fake and phony stuff going on. Oh, my goodness. But it's all good, family, because, again, as I said when we started out tonight, some of us are here to do what needs to be done all across the board. With that said, tonight we are going to talk about a couple of things. And, you know, I've been working on a book called The New Philadelphia Negro, and I've been mentioning it over the past couple of weeks, and we haven't been able to get to it the way I want it to because some of the other dialogue for me was really, you know, kind of more important at that time. And so I just went and let that kind of conversation happen over the past couple of weeks. But we're going to have that conversation tonight about the New Philadelphia Negro, what it is, why it is, and perhaps to some degree, more importantly, what the heck we need to start doing about it. This is not anything new, as we know. We've had traitors in our community. We've had spies, usurpers, and you name it in our communities for as long as we've been able to read some of the history and documentation. But the question now has to be, what are we going to do? Because if we do not, then this behavior will continue, and I dare say it will grow because it's already growing. Almost every time I go to a conference or some other kind of event or activity that supposedly talks about justice and other kinds of things, it's such a hodgepodge of stuff. It's like all of the conversation is really about for everybody. And I'm like, how can that be? I mean, definitely everyone should have justice. Everyone should have human rights. But wait a minute. What about us? What happened to us? What happened to our specific issues, specific struggles for justice? What happened to that? So we're sending the call out, family. Get some drums out. Get some other instruments out. And join us next Sunday. Reparations now. And by the way, family, in the very near future, as we bring forth the Million Woman World March, you're going to hear us talk about some really interesting kinds of things. For example, the Shekmet Society. Sisters, we have asked, we have pleaded, we have even begged that we get some justice as women and that people stop violating us, mistreating us, etc. Well, now we're going to put some things in place to help deal with that issue. And so what I'm talking about is the Shekmet Society for protection, safety, self-defense. On Sunday, July 30th, we will begin to assemble our women, African women gathered in white, to begin to connect to the universe in such a way that we can begin to give some protection or greater protection so that people will not be so easily apt to want to harm us. Because once we come together collectively as sisters, some of the violence and abuse that is seen in our communities, in our families, in our organizations, in our churches, will begin to dissipate. Because they're going to have to deal with some other kinds of energy, if y'all know what I mean. At any rate, we're going to talk a little more about that as we proceed. Again, how do we deal with the new Philadelphia Negro? How do we deal with the people who sell it out? We've got some kind of suggestions and some preparation. Anyway, family, moving right along. Tonight we're going to talk about several things. There is another political prisoner that is coming home. Yep. Our warrior, Michelle McGee, is coming home. And so, you know, this is an incredible time. And for those naysayers and others who say, oh, you know, rallying, marching, all of that, oh, why are we doing that? Well, because it lends to helping some things to happen. At any rate, we're going to talk with our brother Shep, one of our OG, real Black Panther. That's a whole other conversation that we need to have. And that is, again, when you have people in the community, wherever you're at, and they talk to you about being involved in, you know, groups, organization, activities, campaigns like years ago, but not necessarily doing that work today, for real, then you might need to examine things a little closer. And so again, with Brother Shep, for me, that's a perfect example of a brother who has been doing this work consistently in the same kind of way, meaning real clear, real sharp, real intentional, up close and personal. So we're going to talk with Brother Shep very shortly and get some 411 on again, the release, the soon-to-be release of Michelle McGee. But also, we're going to talk with him about the upcoming session that he's going to be doing as a part of the Queen Mother War Weekend. Now, we've been talking about the We Charge Genocide 21 Queen Mother War Weekend for, let me see now, about a year. And it's been so interesting to see the response or the lack thereof. But folks don't know. This is all duly noted. And par for the course, as they say. But the point is, we're moving forward. We got a few glitches, needless to say, as usual, but we have a powerful program that's coming up this coming week. Folks who knew Queen Mother Moore, worked with Queen Mother Moore, were mentored by Queen Mother Moore will be joining us during the course of this week, including Baba Bilal Sunni Ali, including Dr. Garrett, yep, James Garrett. Y'all might not be familiar with him, but you will be. There's going to be quite a few folks that have been talking about Queen Mother Moore, her work. But what we're going to also be talking about with MWM is how do we continue that work, that legacy, in the way she would want it. And that's why we are connecting with people who knew her, worked with her, who she taught, so that we can have a much better idea about what we need to be doing today. Now, I can't speak for other people, and I'm not trying to, but I know what MWM is going to be doing and those who are affiliated with us. And I can assure you it will not be some more Negro stuff. At any rate, as we move forward, again, this week coming up, Queen Mother Moore Weekend, we're going to kick it off with the process of installment. Again, Queen Mother Moore and others, MWM Universal Movements is declaring 25 sisters, great sisters, as now saints. And Queen Mother Moore is one of them, along with Amy Johnson Garvey. Of course, the great Araminta, Harriet Tubman, Ida B. Wells, Nanny, the Maroon, and others. These are our 25 sister saints. And you're going to hear more about that this week because we literally begin our community, what we call community village installment process with drumming, dance, spoken word. And that's going to happen with the kickoff at the great UNIA, ACL. The international headquarters is based here in Philadelphia. And that's where we're going to be on Tuesday, July the 25th. We'll be literally at the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Community League, located here in Philly at 1609 to 11 Cecil B. Moore Avenue in North Philadelphia. Again, we're going to kick off at 5:30 with the community teach-in speak out. Because our position is we want to make sure that our people kind of know a little more about what we're talking about with genocide, human rights, reparations. So we're going to be right outside on the street with our tent, with information, pamphlets, flyers. So that as people come by, we can greet them, talk with them directly, and tell them about Queen Mother Moore, Amy Johnson Garvey, our political prisoners, etc. So we'll be there at the UNIA ACL building again on Tuesday starting at 5:30. Then at 7 o'clock, press conference. Yep, the Million Woman World March is coming. And this is just number one. There'll be number two next year and number three in Africa in 2025. So y'all thought we was playing or something? I don't know. I guess you did. But no, not happening like that. At any rate, we're going to get ready to go to our live line and have our first conversation for tonight. Again, one of our political prisoners is coming home. It is, again, just wonderful to hear and know that this is happening now. I mean, it should have been, needless to say, but for it to now be happening, it is indeed wonderful, powerful, a blessing. It just goes to show you that the work that folks have been doing over the past, in some instances, four decades, is you know, here we are. I dare say if that work had not been happening, we would not be having this conversation. Our folks would still be lingering inside of these cages, inside of these prisons. But again, this is what it's about now, getting more people involved, doing more work, moving these things forward more aggressively. With that said, we're going to share with you tonight one of our projects coming up in regards to Mumia Abu-Jamal. One of the times that I got the chance to talk with Mumia a few months ago, I talked with him about the Mumia Abu-Jamal School of Journalism. And he laughed. He thought it was really cool. And so we get ready to now put it into effect. So there's going to be online sessions as well as community sessions for the Mumia Abu-Jamal School of Journalism that will help folks who are interested in learning more about journalism from a Black perspective, by the way, but also making sure that the professionalism is there, because things that I've been hearing people or in other arenas talk about or allude to is how folks are, you know, on these podcasts and other kinds of things, but they really don't have the kind of training or, you know, for lack of a better word, they don't have the professionalism and so forth. Well, you all kind of know with Mumia, you're getting everything plus. And so with his correspondence course that we're developing, I dare someone to try to question the folk that we put out there as representing as journalists, just because they didn't go to somebody's school that they might have went to. They go into our school, and that's what self-determination is, in fact, about. So let's get ready to go to our live line. I do believe I see our brother Shep is in queue. Again, we're going to talk with him about our brother Rochelle McGee coming home, but also the upcoming session that he has put together to lend to the Queen Mother Moore Weekend that focuses on our political prisoners as well as all of our African freedom fighters past and present. And with that, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the concepts of today. We're going to also talk with Brother Kofi, the chairperson
for the National Black United Front. He's going to be joining us a little later on, give us an update on the 44th year observance that just took place recently in Pennsylvania, but closer to Pittsburgh. Reverend Daughtry, who I'll be talking with soon, just to kind of, again, we like to make sure we connect to history. Good, bad, or indifferent, it's necessary to do so. And so Brother Kofi, you know, connect me with Reverend Daughtry so that we can really get that information about Queen, his interaction with Queen of the Moor and other things. So let's get ready to go to our live line. And hold on one moment. Let's do this. We are going to now talk with our brother Shep. And again, we're going to talk about what's coming up on Friday. You talk about a powerful session. Oh, my gosh. You're going to love this one. And I'm going to also talk about, again, the coming home soon for our political prisoner, Rochelle McGee. Let's do this. Let's go to our live line. Hey, Brother Chef, we got you in queue now.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. How's my brother this evening?
Okay, I thought I had to push some more buttons.
Yes, no, we got you.
All right. Yes, peace, everyone. All power to people in free and war.
Yes. Yes.
I guess I could. You want me to start out with McGee, with
uh-huh.
our comrade?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And I just want to say that, you know, Russia sent Q McGee. You know, back in the day, he was known as Black Sent Q. You know, that's that. You know, we dropped that part to make it short. He did that, mm-hmm. but he's 84 years old.
Mm-hmm.
84
mm-hmm.
years old. And still held captive. And for me, it's really special because, you know, I'll be 69 this year. And
wow.
McGee's been like that for 67 years. 67 years. You know, he was out for a brief moment between two cases in the streets. But, I mean, as long as I've been alive, he's been in prison.
Wow.
And that really has an effect, you know.
Yeah.
But one thing I do want to say, as per the family, we really tried to keep on the fact that he's going to be released just internally. So, like, of course, all the folks on this program are family. You're internal.
Yeah.
But we
yeah.
haven't really put it out in the public yet because we're waiting for his feet to be on the ground on the
That's
other
right.
side of the walls. You know, we don't want any changes because – those who remember what happened to our comrade, Veronica Bowers, he was supposed to be released and his family was waiting for him, had got off the airport and everything. And then this pig, at that time, the Attorney General Rodriguez, he said, no, anybody convicted of killing a cop is never getting out. And he
mm-hmm.
locked him back up. You know, mm-hmm. even though the parole board, the warden, everyone said yes, that Veronica should go home. And
yeah.
he's 77 years right now and still in prison and waiting for a decision to come up from his parole hearing last month. So we're hoping
yeah.
that he'll be released this month too. But it's the situation, this is related directly to what we're going to be doing, you know, for Queen Mother Moore weekend. Is that there are
yeah.
right now 16 of our elders that are still captive. 16 of them. They're veterans from the 60s, the 70s, and the early 80s struggle for New African independence and Black liberation. Most of them, people don't know who they are. They've forgotten about mm-hmm. them. And
right.
what we're going to be doing is we're going to have a panel of eight younger people. I'm not going to say young people, but younger people. And folks that are not the usual suspects, so to speak. And they're
right.
studying
right.
the history of these freedom fighters. And they're going to mm-hmm. each do two of them on that day. It's going to be a full day of activities. We're going to have some food, and I'm going to be on the grill. We'll have some culture and stuff, because we are, after all, celebrating our Queen Mother Moore, you know. But
yeah.
The evening is going to be critical because we want to bring our elders home.
All right. All right. So, where, again, we need to let people know where and what time and
When I do these interviews, after, you know, the host is usually got questions and interjecting and all of that, so I'm used to pausing.
But we're a little different, you know. We're a little unorthodox, so I like to turn the mic over, you know, to our family, because, you know, that it keeps the flow going. I mean, I'll intervene if I need to, but you know what to say. You've been doing it, so you got the mic.
All right, I guess I should probably start out with I'm Brother Shep, Siddiqui Ojere Olugbola is my name. You know, some people might see my government name, Shepherd McDaniel. But I'm a veteran of the original Black Panther Party, working here in New York City, primarily in the Bronx and Harlem offices. I was actually the last distribution manager for the Black Panther newspaper in the 70s until it ended distribution officially in 1980. And I was actually responsible for sending out Panther papers to Philly. That was part of my assignment for the whole East Coast. But that's just a brief history. But everything at this point for me has been to bring out freedom fighters home. You know, you mentioned Brother Mamiya. Mamiya and I are actually the same age. He's a couple of months older than I am. But that's another thing. You know, all this time he's been locked up and I've been out here free, so to speak, minimally free. You know, it's my responsibility to bring him home. He needs to be home.
That's right.
You know, we're real brothers, you know, not just comrades, but in age and everything. You know,
that's
and,
right.
I'm really glad to hear about that school you're going to do. That's going to be awesome.
Brother Shep, were you familiar with Brother Del Jones?
I knew yes. but I know him, yeah.
Right. So this is what happened, because Mumia, you know, as quiet as it's kept, Mumia also was very, he influenced Del a lot as well. And so this is why, for those who are familiar with Del, he always talked about Mumia, you know, during the time, particularly of his incarceration. You know, he was always on that front line fighting to free Mumia. But the point is that what we're doing with this campaign is, of course, having Mumia to do the correspondence piece with his training information, but also connecting it to someone like Del Jones, who we used to call the war correspondent. So Mumia was known as the voice of the voiceless, right? Del was called the war correspondent. So what we're combining the curriculum is, of course, for whatever Mumia wants, and this will allow us, again, to educate, you know, folks that don't know much about Mumia. Now they get educated about him, but also get that one-on-one kind of training from him, you know, by way of a correspondence course, so that we're now also able to keep his information and the struggle for his freedom becomes, you know, put out there in now another kind of way by us training our own journalists, our own writers, you see. And so now here we've developed something silly that we call the Black Whirlwind News Network. And, of course, we've gotten that from the album Marcus Garvey, when him saying, "I'll see you in the whirlwind." Well,
yes.
Now we got a piece that works. You see, we talk about ancestors, but a lot of times I'm not hearing what's the connecting components with what they taught. What are we talking about doing that represents their work? So that's why when we kick things off here in Philly on Tuesday, where else other than the UNIA?
Right. Yeah, I caught part of that. And you mentioned ancestors. You know, I always tell people I was blessed to have had, when I was in Hunter in the early 70s and, you know, to the mid 70s, I was blessed to have had Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, and Marimba Ani, and other folks that were my teachers there. And one of the quotes that I like to use from Dr. Clark, which a lot of professors are afraid to go into, But he's very clear about the fact that we were brought here as prisoners of war. You know,
that's
everybody
right.
said, oh, it was slavery. But no, we were prisoners of war. And he made a point to say that the freedom fighters that fought in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s that took up arms, okay, followed in the tradition of Nat Turner and Gabriel Prosser and Denmark Vesey and, you know, Harriet and all of that. And that they should be liberated. They should be free, you know. And a lot of people are afraid to support our freedom fighters. You know, they say, oh, well, they might have killed a cop or they might have robbed a bank, you know, which is not true. You know, expropriation
right.
of the enemy's funds for our liberation is not a crime. Armed struggle is not a crime. You know, we are a colonized nation, and we need our liberation by any means necessary, as another one of our ancestors is known for have saying. And we talk about the Black Liberation Army, and we just lost one of our ancestors, you know, Dr. Mutuku Shakur.
Yes.
And, you know, by the blessings of struggle and the ancestors and the creator, he was able to spend some of that time with family. And even then, he was still doing work, you know.
Yes.
He was
yes.
out doing forums and lectures and giving orders. Giving
right.
people work to do. I got that phone call myself, you know, and, you know, we got to carry those traditions on, you know.
That's right.
We're currently working with Kamal Siddiqui Freedom Campaign, and we decided that we would begin to really look at getting more involved in other struggles and bringing the struggle to free our freedom fighters into those struggles. So it began with looking at elders in prison. Everyone mostly knows that most of the prisons are filled with our people. But what people don't really look at is that the majority of them are elders because of that quote-unquote baby boomer generation, they call it. You know,
yeah.
And they've been dying. COVID knocked out a great number of our elders. And they have families. And so when we talk about freeing our political prisoners, we're automatically talking about freeing elders because all of our political prisoners are elders now. They've been locked up for 40, 50, and 60 years.
Right, right.
You know, and so by shifting into that direction of all the elders, we automatically include them, and we're able to teach people about our freedom fighters that get involved with liberating our elders. So this program, and real quickly I'll go through that. It's going to be on Friday, July 28th, at the Church of the Overcomer by a liberation theologist, Pastor Keith Collins, who I'm sure most people in Philly know who that is. He's been involved in years
right,
for a long
right.
time. And I really got to know him. He has programs in his church. He has folks from prison that come in, and he works with them,
yeah.
and released, and a whole lot of positive stuff for this brother. But
yeah. Yeah.
what we're going to do is we're going to have a Black Liberation Movement History and Memorabilia exhibit at the church. That's going to be from 10 until 6 o'clock. And we're going to be bringing a lot of books and posters and different articles, particularly for the young people. And his church is right in the middle of the Black community where he's at. And bring them in so they can get that history and learn about their culture and about struggle and see it visually, you know, and get the truth that's not on the stinking internet, because there's so much untruth when you go online and look up our struggle mm-hmm. there. Well, we have the real articles there to show them and go through it with them. I already mentioned, yeah, we're going to be cooking out. I'm going to be on the grill. We got some cultural stuff going on from 1 to 6, but people will be able to see the exhibit and network with different groups that are working to free our freedom fighters. And then, of course, we're going to end off with the Free Our Elder Black New African Political Prisoners Forum, which will be from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. And, of course, we have the folks that I mentioned are going to be giving us the history on those 16 elders who are still in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, Michelle won't be there, but we're still going to talk about his case there. And,
right.
You know, just going through that, you know, Ed Poindexter is 78. Barron's is 77. Kamal is 70. Kenny Whitmore is 68. Malik Smith from the Virgin Island Five now is 3. He's 73. Kojo is 70. Joseph Bowen from Philadelphia, he's 77. Fred Burton is 76. He's another one in the Philly Five. Rochelle McGee, we mentioned, 84. Larry Hoover is 72. Reverend Joy Powell is 61. Abdul Aziz is 76. Hanif Shabazz Bey is 73. Imam Jamil Al-Amin is 79.
Malik
is 69. And last but not least, Huda Malik Kabbal is 76. So we're talking about elders and the conditions there right now. I saw a report where the heat wave that's been going on, that folks are cooking in those prison cells.
Yeah.
So now we're dealing with medical neglect and elder abuse, and you know, the biological stuff that goes on there with the food and everything else. They are literally killing our people there, and folks are not thinking about it. So that's our job. Our job is to free our freedom fighters and let people know about the conditions that they're going through and what our people are going through. And more importantly, to bring that to the families. There's nobody in our community that doesn't know or have somebody that's either in prison, was in prison, or knows somebody that is in prison. Because we are at war. And the enemy will do anything it can to take us off the streets. If they don't kill us, then they put us into these jails and these dungeons. And we all know that the slave trade and business was never ended by the 13th Amendment. So we're going to have people coming up after this. This is kicking off everything this Friday, July 28th, because when we go into Black August, we're going full steam ahead. There's going to be Curve Fest in Boston, Baltimore, and New York, Curve Fest for Political Prisoners, which also originated in Philly 2 years ago through the Maroon campaign and then through Kamau. Mm-hmm. And we also, the African American Day Parade, our Freedom Fighters contingent is going to be again in Harlem, where we have a float there. Sunday Otto was there, and Sekou and all of our elders. They receive rounding support from millions of people on the sides of the streets in Harlem who remember them before they got captured and that they're home. And then, of course, the weekend right after Queen Mother World Weekend, the brothers that have been incarcerated who started the Prison Lives Matter movement across this country, they've been able to communicate on the outside with phones now and organizing a Liberate Our Elders conference, which is going to be 3 days based in Chicago, Oakland, and New York. It's going to be hybrid, so there'll be live panels, and there also will be virtually broadcasting it with some excellent panels. So we're moving forward, and we're making sure that we put our elders first, because our elders are closest to our ancestors. Our ancestors are closest to the Creator and the Orisha. And we don't forget our spirituality and the cosmology of us as an African people. We always put that forward.
I say, I know that's right. Brother Shep, just to recap, because I'm sure, you know, some of our listeners are already, you know, pretty in tune to what we're talking about. But for those who might not, and we're hoping that there are some who might not, you know, and they're trying to grow, trying to learn, you know, we talk about political prisoners. We talk about prison industrialized complex, mass incarceration, and so forth. And again, these are areas for the Witch Hunt Genocide 21. And again, connecting this to Queen Mother Moore, a lot of people don't know. They know about Queen Mother Moore in terms of the reparations piece, but don't know, you know, a lot of the other work that she did. And, of course, that, too, was represented fighting, you know, prison and fighting jail and fighting injustice surrounding, you know, the so-called law enforcement or whatever. And so these are some of the things we're going to be highlighting about her. But with that said, I think it's important that we also say and share that why are we so talking so much about political prisoners? You know, people are respected based on some of the things that they do. And so with that said, we strongly say to people that for those who talk about justice, liberation, and those kinds of things, if we are not standing up for people who put their lives on the line for us, what does that say about us? What are your thoughts about that, Brother Shep?
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about this, you know, often. There is no nation on this planet that does not put their political prisoners and captive freedom fighters first. It doesn't exist except for our nation here. We don't do it across the board. And it's a travesty because when you look at different movements that are going on, you know, you might be against police brutality or you might be for housing or against the poisonous that they're doing to the environment, food security, you know, all the different things that people find reasons to want to protest and get organized around. Every single one of our captured freedom fighters did the same thing. And because we took the position of not turning the other cheek or not allowing the pigs to come in and kill our young people and not being a consequence for it, we suffer for that because our people
right.
ran and they abandoned us. You know, people, a lot of people don't know. Everybody yet talks about Dr. Martin Luther King Day and this and that and the other. But when King started calling the United States the greatest proprietor of violence on the planet, and he attacked the military-industrial complex and said, get the hell out of Vietnam, and started talking about bringing poor people to take over Washington, D.C., and started organizing unions for black sanitation workers, they said, oh, no, uh-uh. We can't do
right.
that. You know, and they all ran. And I'm talking about all the Negroes that run around talking about King. They abandoned him. They said, oh,
that's
he
right.
can't let be like Malcolm X. You know, and especially when he started talking about international stuff. And that's why they assassinated him, just like they assassinated Malcolm. And so because of that, the enemy doesn't have too much work to do when they criminalize our freedom fighters and say that they're nothing but bank robbers and cop killers. We have a right to defend ourselves, and we have a right to take up arms. Every other colonized nation does that. And when we do it, it's supposedly a crime. Well, laws are made to serve men and women. We're not put
right.
here to serve laws. If they're unjust, then we need to challenge them, and we need to ignore them until they're changed. And we change it by any means necessary. So when we say, when I mentioned earlier that Professor Clark said we were prisoners of war, we still
yes.
are prisoners of war. Some is low intensity, some is high intensity. But we're still at war, and we're not free. That whole fallacy about Juneteenth, and I don't want to go too far off the subject, that's bullshit. You know, excuse my language, but come on. We know, if you study your history, you know that black folks did not just escape to Canada in the north. They went south to Mexico. Okay, there was
right.
communication network that was set up in Texas and everywhere else. And you try to tell me that, oh, we didn't know about emancipation. That's bullshit.
Right.
Of course they knew. They might not have been able to escape, but there was traffic
right.
and communications all through the south, and there's a whole black nation in northern Mexico that's still there for when they fought against the Alamo. You know, black people fought on the side of Mexico because they didn't have slavery there. So Juneteenth is we should commemorate it, but there ain't
right,
nothing to
right.
celebrate because we're not free. Same thing with those other co-optations. Kwanzaa is garbage now. It's all been commercialized. Black
right,
History
right.
Month is a joke. You know,
right.
and all these, you know, whenever the enemy says, oh, we recognize it and we will now give you a holiday or a holiday as, you know, so my ancestors
right.
would call it, you know.
What?
You know it ain't real. It ain't real. I mean, come on, let's be for real. They ain't gonna
that's
never
right.
give Malcolm X no holiday, national holiday, because they know that the truth will come out. So it's like Black August they can't touch. Yes, we talk about Negroes, There's some Negroes out there who got millions of dollars trying to say that Black Lives Matter. Another hijack. BLM
right.
stood for Black Liberation Movement,
yes,
not Black
yes.
Lives Matter. Okay.
Yes.
So they changed that, took out the liberation part because that automatically means armed struggle, liberation, is fighting for our liberation and independence. So they took that out. These fools are talking about, oh, August is Black Entrepreneur Month. Get the fuck out of here. You're not telling me that you're going to change Black August into a capitalist holiday month? No. Black August was out of the prison movement, George Jackson, Attica, Black Guerrilla Family, you know, all the folks, you know, coming out of that movement, kicking off from California and spreading throughout the nation. And Black August was recognized that way. We looked at the history of August, the Haitian Revolution, Marcus Garvey, George Jackson, Jonathan Jackson, all the different things that happened in August. That's our month. And they can't take it from us, and they won't take it from us. And the Negroes need to step off. Black capitalism. I mean, give me a break. But, I mean, you know, they got their millions of dollars, and they co-opted
right,
and changed
right.
stuff around. I guess they did what they're supposed to do. Just like them fools in Atlanta, or those Negroes that voted yes for Cop City. And then we got
oh
the Negroes
God.
In Washington, D.C., who just voted to increase police funding in D.C. All Negroes. Because there has to come a time when we have to begin to deal with the traitors in of our race. They need to be dealt with.
Absolutely.
They need to change.
Absolutely.
Or step
on. Brother, you know, I don't know if you heard me when we opened up for tonight, but that was one of the things that I started off with, saying how this is only going to get worse if we do not begin to address some of these things that are happening in our community to sell us out. And what I mentioned, Brother Shep, was, see, again, I'm a holistic kind of person, so I believe in doing stuff all across the board. And so for those who don't necessarily want to deal with arms or other kind of self-defense from the physical aspect, be it martial arts or other kinds of, you know, acts that enables them to be not only self-determined but to deal with self-defense. So you have some that say, you know, well, they don't want to do it with physically. So my position is, okay, then let's do it spiritually. You see, nobody should be able not to do something to deal with the enemy. You see, so
and we always said that before. We always said if all you can do is make a flyer or write a poem
right.
or sing
right,
a song,
right.
if it's about being free, then do that. You know, spirituality, definitely. You know, we're going to have we're arranging right now, organizing our national conference, interfaith conference, so we can bring all of our faiths together to get our people out of these prisons.
Right.
You know, and that's being worked on now. So it's like we're beginning now to move out. And let me tell you, our young folks ain't having it. I know you probably remember when you were young and you looked up and you said, oh, those are Uncle Tom's over there. You know? And now some of our generation have become the new Uncle Tom's. I'm not with that. I'm staying with the young folks. No, I'm not afraid to go in the corner and talk to my young brothers and sisters that's hanging out.
That's right.
I don't cross
that's
the
right.
street. I go where they're at. I don't tell
that's
them,
right.
oh, you got to come to this meeting. No, we're going to come where you at and have a meeting. You know, people say, oh, well, they need to come to the demo and the march. It's like, don't you know half of these young people got warrants, okay? They can't go to no demonstration or no march. And some of them just ain't got the tolerance or the patience for it either. They're like, well, you let me know when it's time to get busy, then I'll be there. But they're not ignorant to what's going on in this world. You know, they
That's
might
right.
not have the political... Diet, you know, you call it rhetoric to say
right.
or the study to put it out there, but they know this world is messed up and they know who the enemy is. And so you got to be with them. You got to be in the community. You can't be organized 24/7 on no damn computer because that's not where the people are. You know, and, you know, I like what you say, you know, having that building that y'all are working on there and being right in the hood where the people are.
That's
where the stuff is. And, you know, just throwing up a panther on your head, on your hat and saying you a revolutionary, but you don't have no office in the neighborhood. You have nowhere for the people to go. You have no programs. All you do is run in front of a camera and a mic something jumps off and talk garbage and throw out wolf tickets. That's not a being a revolutionary. That's being an opportunist.
And
you don't have time, and the young people know that. They know who's real. They know who ain't real. So we got to be real.
Yeah. This, again, is why for now there's a focus on organizing in our communities nationwide. When we bring forward not only the Retrace to the Side 21, but also what we call the Black Current Agenda 25, it focuses on organizing our communities throughout the U.S. You know, I've gone to Detroit, Chicago, Baltimore, D.C., and other so-called urban cities to really evaluate, connect, and to see what can we do in some of these major cities that have a history, by the way, of resistance. Newark, for example. And so what we've learned is, unfortunately, over the years, these cities have not only been co-opted in terms of anything that really was trying to represent Black liberation, Black justice, but also, you know, COVID has even put the people that used to kind of be doing some stuff, it seemed like COVID even put them to sleep. Because a lot of the folks that I mean, here in Philly, I can speak for Philly. There were people who were kind of doing a few things, right, that lend more to some more proactive, Black proactive kind of things. But now even a lot of them have, you know, just gotten weak. And I don't know. It's like since COVID, that just created a whole nother kind of lack of energy, for lack of a better word.
Oh, I was at a hip-hop concert on Thursday. And one of the MCs, he broke out, he said, the plandemic.
right.
He just threw it out there just like that. Everybody was like, yeah, that's what it was, you know, because the place was packed. No, they wasn't trying to hear that, you know, not being with each other. But, yeah, I mean, as a people, we always, you know, we're about being with each other, about seeing each other, embracing each other, you know, all that. And that, like, took that away from us. And you talk about spirituality, that caused a whole lot of despiritualization in us, which is what Western concept is about, despiritualizing the universe. They don't want that. You know, they want to control things, make it robotic and technical, and, you know, everybody running around like Mr. Spock, you know. That's the world they're looking for.
I hate to say it, Brother Shep, but it looked like it's coming because, again, you know, one of the things that
I
think you
ain't have this. I disagree with you. We are too powerful.
Let's put it this way. And this was one of our other topics for tonight, dealing with the concept and idea of the declaration of separation. And what I mean by that is, you know, at some point, we're going to have to, even though we're doing stuff in our communities and we'll continue to do so, we're going to also have to create some kind of units or cadres that are really doing certain kinds of things. And what I mean by that is a segment of our people, and I could be wrong, but remember the saying, like the church folks used to say, not everybody going to be saved? Well, that's what I'm saying now. And here's why I say that. Ancestors are saying to me, do this, do this, do this, and do that, right? Because this is what's coming. This is what's happening. But unfortunately, everyone is not seeing this or abiding to it. Let's put it that way. Because some people see the same thing, know some of the same stuff. They ain't really trying to do that, right? So my point is that something very drastic is going to have to happen before folks go, okay, yeah, we really need to do this. Perfect example, we just saw COVID. Here in Philly, I watched for 2 years now, after COVID kind of, you know, went a little bit, and I've been watching. The point is, in our communities here in Philly, there's nothing that focuses on emergency response. There's nothing that focuses on basic survival stuff, not in our community.
Yeah.
So what we're doing now is bringing that, right? And I'm like, how do you see something with COVID and you don't realize that we need to be doing some stuff because these people, and check this out, Brother Shaw. Now, you're in New York. How was the air situation there like a few weeks ago?
Sister, there ain't no difference between there and you, where you at and where we at and how people respond to that. When we used to feed people on the corner in Harlem, we would tell them as they were getting their food, you know, like, you know, with the megaphones, you know, just letting them know. It's like, do you know where the biggest earthquake fault in New York City is at? And nobody knew. It's right here on 125th Street. I said, if an earthquake comes to New York, it's coming here. Are you prepared? Do you have water in your house? Do you have a plan to get the elders up and out of the building? Do you know first aid and CPR? Do you have the medical stuff there? I mean, no, they don't. I said, do you know how to get out of the city? Are you going to listen and wait for FEMA to come save you? Or do you have your own plan? You know what people look like? No, you're right. Yeah. Well, then you need to do exactly what you're talking about, y'all are doing. That needs to happen everywhere. We have to have emergency preparedness and not do OCHA. Yeah, it's cool to get their little certification because that gets you to go around and see what the hell they're doing. But I know when we got hit by Sandy and here, and when we went into Far Rockaway and Coney Island and and Red Hook, FEMA wasn't there.
Right.
We were there first. And then when they did come, they didn't go out through the hood. They said, especially Coney Island, they said, this is this place where the staging area where you have to come and get your supplies. And they expected elders who couldn't get up and down the stairs in the projects because there's no electricity, no elevators, and people to walk 30 blocks to get to the space. We said, hell no. No, we had somebody that worked for Parks Department, and we took three of those big dump trucks from the beach, and we loaded up with water and supplies and blankets and everything. All the trucks, we loaded them up because the person that was there was part of one of the street organizations there. And he saw us, and said, y'all take whatever y'all want. And we rode back to the projects and made sure, got all the street crews that were the young folks sitting down at the bottom of the projects, doing nothing. Say, what are y'all doing? What about Miss Mary upstairs on the 15th floor? You take some water up there. And we organized them, you know, because they realized, I said, this is your hood, your neighborhood. It ain't supposed to be us doing this. You need to be doing it. We're bringing you the stuff. You need help. We show you how to do it. And we gave them the radios and the communications and all the stuff they needed so they could organize the buildings. That's what we got to do.
Wow.
But not when the emergency comes, but before it comes.
Right.
You know, people forget about Katrina, sister. All you got to do is look at them old films, you know, that ain't so old, and see what happened.
Right.
How people died. You know, people don't remember that. I have to give the brother credit. Spike don't do too many good things, but that film thing he did on Katrina, it was good. You know, seeing the bottom, all that stuff. You know, he did a good job with that one. But people forget. In fact, they forget when they shoot our kids down the street. They're marched for a little while, and then you have some Negroes that run around talking about, you know, no justice, no peace for a while, and get on the camera, and then they step off. And everybody stops marching. You know, we just got to stop. We got to look at things the way they are and call a spade a spade. And a Negro fell out.
Yeah, and I think, again, that's going to be very, very important. You know, here in Philly, I don't know if you heard about, they had some kind of people's convention or something this weekend. I just heard about it, like, yesterday. I talked to
I didn't hear about it.
Yeah, and it was, I was like, okay, that's deep. But the point is, this is how things are happening or not happening, meaning there's these various conferences and other things, and it's just hodgepodge of stuff, you see. And so this is the impression, or this is the kind of representation that is being put out in our communities in the context of social justice. And it encompasses
right.
a whole lot of other stuff, right? So mm-hmm. so my point is, you know, it is very clear to me that those of us who are in the spirit of a Dr. Khaled or Dr. John Henry Clark or Dr. Amos Wilson and Dr. Ben, we're going to have to step it up. We're going to have to step it up and represent in that kind of manner, which brings us to why we're doing this Queen Mother More weekend, because anybody knows anything about Queen Mother, she was no joke. She was no joke.
And you know what? I'm going to release the interview that I did with Professor Clark, and it's going to make a whole lot of them folks turn their head and say, what? Because he criticizes a whole lot of these professors and Afrocentrics in the interview about how, you know, oh, they don't do it because they're afraid of losing their tenure and this and that. No, he doesn't hold it back. You know, I wish I had videotaped it, but it's an audio. And we actually had put it in the Panther paper when we came back in the 90s when I did that interview with him. But I'm going to release it so you can hear him talk about that. You know, after, you know, Dr.
Wow.
McIntosh did a great job. He put it out there at 1 o'clock's triggers, which is tomorrow, by the way. Folks should tune into that. It's online, John Henry Clark tribute. But
okay,
you're absolutely right. But it's not only is it them co-opting our legitimate movement and using it to dilute things, but if you're an 18, 19-year-old and you hear this conference in Philly, People's Conference, and you go there. And
right.
you listen to the rhetoric, and then you decide to be a part of it, and then all of a sudden you discover that it's nothing but bullshit, then you get, you know, disenchanted. It's like, I'm not messing with these people are all full of shit. And so you lose warriors that way. They step off
right.
and they forget
right.
about it. They say, we ain't doing nothing. And so we
right.
all get grouped into the same bag, or none of them ain't doing nothing. That's
right.
why it's important that we be in the street. Where our people are at, in the hood, you know, that's where we got to be at. That's where we should
right.
be organizing.
But also with that brings some very serious, strong, non-accommodationist kind of stuff. Because here's the flip side of what you just said, Brother Shep. So you have some of the youth that'll see, you know, through the nonsense and then will, you know, like, nah, I don't want to get involved in that. But then you have some who are searching and don't know. They don't know
right.
anything else is out there or that there was something. And then they see that and go, oh, okay. And so they get caught up in that because they're not seeing something else. Because remember, what's happening now in a lot of our communities is this accommodationist stuff. And as a result,
yeah.
the focus on the Black experience from both a historical perspective and as it is applicable today, it's not there. Even with people that I know, you know certain things, they ain't representing that. They get out here amongst
no.
other, you know, folk, and you wouldn't even know that they had a certain other kind of information.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't even know it.
Well, if you think about it, remember what happened when they came in with the poverty programs and started giving everybody money, you know, to have their own little offices and their own programs. And these are all, you know, folks that was in the movement. And then all of a sudden
right.
they say, okay, now you got your car, your apartment, your little check, you know, you get every 2 weeks. And we want you to stop doing this program. What do you mean? This is what we're up. If you don't stop doing it, we're going to cut your money. And so they stopped
doing
it.
That's right.
You know, so then they all sold out, and then eventually they just shut them down anyway. And then you don't have those programs no more. So it's almost the same thing. You know, folks who got their little 501(c)(3)s, and they're getting their grants from the government, and then eventually the government says, okay, you can't start We don't want you talking about Malcolm X no more. We're going to cut your funds.
That's
nah,
right.
We don't want you doing Africa. Nah, you know what? We can't have no Africa. Oh, we're saving your people in Africa by bringing the military there. Oh, yeah, we're going to invade Haiti, and we're going to invade Peru, and we're going to take over the whole southern hemisphere. And what's Cuba? Nah, those are communists. You know, not to mention the fact that nearly 70% of the population in Cuba is African. You know, people forget that part. Yeah, they got their problems organizing, too, just like most of Latin America, dealing with the whole European slave system and racism. But people are struggling and fighting against it. We got rid of that fool in Brazil, finally. You know, so the what they call, you call himself the Trump of the South.
Right.
It's that whole world struggle. I mean, there are no African nations yet. They're all, as Clark used to tell us, they're all imitation European nations.
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, there wasn't no mistake when they killed Lumumba and Nkrumah,
sure,
and Cabral.
Sure.
All of them. They said, no, Pan-Africanism? No, we can't have that. What, you're going to get rid of U.S. dollar? Oh, get rid of Gaddafi. He got to go. He's talking about a whole new economy using African resources to support it, and he's going to spread it throughout the diaspora? No, we got to kill Gaddafi. What? They kicked the white people out of Zimbabwe? Nah,
right.
Mugabe got to go. He's a terrorist. Let's put a sanction on him. You know? And look at Azania, what they still call South Africa.
Right,
there is no
right.
reason why no black people should still be living in poverty. But what happened? ANC sold out. You know, we always support the PAC because they say all those white
That's
folks
right.
need to get the hell out of South Africa. But they didn't
That's
do that.
Right.
So who runs the gold mines? Who runs the diamonds? Who runs all
yep.
the economy? Those same Africans that were in there all the time. They're still running shit. And our people
That's
are poor.
Right.
You know, so it's a lot of work. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. But you know what? Our advantage is that we got communications now, sis. It's like we're talking right now. I don't know how many people are listening, but the information is getting out there. And
That's right.
It's like we used to say, especially with children, never teach a child what to think, but you teach them how to think. And once they're able to analyze things for what they are, they'll figure out who's full of shit and who ain't. But we got to provide that information.
That's right. That's right. And for those who don't know, just to give a little clarity, ANC, of course, is the African National Congress, and the PAC was the Pan-African Congress. And so, you know, again, the PAC tend to be a lot more progressive than ANC. And these are something, this is something else that we have to go through. I was talking with my son earlier today, and we talked about some of the sessions that we're going to be doing in the future. We call it Poli-Sci 101, because a lot of people don't know. We have these conversations and we're talking to each other, but a lot of times people don't know what we're talking about when we utilize certain terminologies or when we make a reference to certain things. And so what we decided that we're going to do is make some of this a little more readily accessible and palatable, and we're going to be doing what we call Poli-Sci 101, meaning Political Science 101. And see,
that's the key. Let me tell you, that's it. I mean, when the pandemic was going on, or pandemic, whatever you want to call it, you know,
right.
And I did one march. We did a march from Central Park to Washington Square Park. And I was supposed to speak, and they hemmed and hawed and did all their little bullshit, gave my 3 minutes at the end. But, you know, all I basically said was, you know, I pointed out the fact that they needed political education. Okay, and our question to them was, okay, what's going to happen when y'all leave this march?
Right.
We're talking about tens of thousands of people that was out there just looking. It's like they had no answer. I said, the organizers never walked around with clipboards. They never had flyers. They didn't have a plan. They didn't have anything to follow up on. They just wanted you to come out, march, yell, and scream, and talk on the stage. I said, any of y'all that want that? And I gave out my email. I got flooded for all these young people, and I actually started doing PE classes. So I did them for 2 years. I'm going to start another session again. But doing exactly what you're talking about, you know, I used one of the curriculums that we had, you know, with the Panther Collective, and
yes.
Three levels. You do 10. When you finish that, then you do the next 10, and then you do the next one.
Right.
And it's all based
That's
on,
right.
And I use the word 10, the 10-10-10 philosophy of the Panther Party. Where 10 people teach everyone 10 people that information, and then they in turn teach another 10. So you go from 10 to 100 to 1,000 people that are on the same page. And the idea is for them to go out and start doing PE classes. So right now I got about 20 graduates who are going to start doing their own. And this is nationwide. I had high school students in California that hooked up and were doing the classes. And I kept them, and you should be mindful of the amount of people, I kept it between 8 and 12. That way it was interactive, and I was able to bring in guest speakers on different topics to come in and talk about different subjects. And so it worked out fine, you know, and I'm going to start that again. But what you're saying, yes, they need political education. We need to go into these community rooms and these projects and throw that television in there and put a tape in there and show a film and have a speaker and dialogue and talk to them about those things in their own neighborhood. Not all come down to so-and-so. No, 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 no. Go in the hood.
Right.
Do the
That's
questions
right.
there. We used to do it. No, yes, some churches would help. But if they didn't, sure, we had somebody had a big apartment. We got in the living room, cooked some food, and sat down with 6 or 10 of us, and we had PE classes with that neighborhood. You can do it. It can be done.
Wow. That's right. Well, this is what we now are going to do. I mean, we've been talking about doing it, but now this is what we're literally going to do. And with that, do the kind of organizing in our community, because that's what has now kind of dissipated. We're not organizing in our communities on a regular basis. It's like a something here, something there, but nothing that really focuses on, you know, something that's really consistent, continual, and hard-hitting. That's not happening.
Absolutely.
There's a conference here, a forum there. But, you know, something that we know is going to be happening everywhere. You know, this is why I used to love people like Brother Alton Maddox, because you knew every week they were doing
the
lecture. That's right.
Yeah, and Lombe Pass, you should do the same thing, Harry Tubman.
Yeah.
Yep, and then First World, you should do stuff with Clark and Ben and Sister and Keith, you know, all of that. Yeah.
There you go.
Consistency. Every week
there
you knew where to go.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, so this is like, this is just ridiculous now. That's all I can say. It's just becoming more and more ridiculous, and we are allowing it to some degree. And so, you know, time that we step it up. So listen, family, we're going to go to you all. It's your turn. We'd like to get some input, feedback from you. Join in on this conversation. We welcome you to do so. Share your thoughts, opinions. One of the things that we wanted to bring to your attention, family, is as we proceed, we're going to be talking more about the ideals, the concepts, the theories of Black nationalism and Pan-Africanism. Now, there's been quite a few attacks on both of those areas of struggle over the past couple of years. I found that to be real interesting, by the way. But we want to make sure that we're able to critique it intelligently, and in doing so, look to see how do we need to bring things forward. So for some, they're into throwing, remember saying, Brother Shep, throwing the baby out with the bathwater? So some folks are like, yeah, they're like into doing that. They see some of the downfalls or not, you know, some things that they feel should happen, and they just want to toss it all out, right? And I'm like, yo, do you have a philosophy and opinion? Do you have some actual concrete structural stuff that we can look at, analyze, and that's going to help bring us forward? Because if not, what you might want to consider doing is looking at what we already have, looking at the pros and cons of it, and then saying, well, okay, this is what we now need to do to improve it, as opposed to just totally trying to throw shade on it all. How about that? Crazy. But anyway, let's go to some of our callers. Caller, you are at 2372. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
But, this is Brother Kofi.
Oh, Brother Kofi, I didn't know that was you. I was looking for your other. You called from a different number.
No, this is Kofi talking in Houston. I hear you talking to Chef Kit. What's up, Chef?
Oh, that is Brother Chet. That's Brother Kofi out there in Texas.
Texas,
yeah,
that's right. We represent for Texas.
I heard you had a good thing out there. I talked to Brother Charles and Brother Khalid and some other folks. Yeah, they said that you had a real good event out there.
Right, up in Pennsylvania. Yeah, but this is Brother Kofi. So I was just listening. I came in a little late, so I didn't get the full concept of everything what you were speaking about. But yeah,
right.
I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn.
You sound like, you know who said something similar to that? Our great elder, Brother Neely Fuller. He said something to the effect, always learning.
That's
one of the things he said. But listen, Brother Kofi, stay right there for a minute. We're going to come back to you because we want to get the report on, as Brother Shep mentioned last week, of course, was the 44th year commemoration of the National Black United Front. And when we talked to Brother Kofi a few weeks ago, one of the things that we mentioned or talked about is the fact that it was Brother Malcolm X and others that talked about the need for a United Black Front / Black United Front. And so, again, we're going to hear the report on what happened last week when they met here in Pennsylvania, actually near Pittsburgh, but also where do we go from here? So we're going to keep Brother Shet with us so that he can chime in on that as well. But before we have Brother Kofi to give his response or his report, we're going to go to caller. You are at 9498. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Hello, Sister Filet. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Ray Ray. How you been?
Okay, good program. Good program. Sorry I missed a few weeks. Yeah, and he's right about Coney Island, because when the water and stuff came through there, the people didn't know what to do. A lot of them passed away. They couldn't get out the project.
Mm.
I was in Coney Island today, man. They just flooded all out. And it's a different jail time for political prisoners than regular inmates, man. They catch a lot of hell. Jail time for political
prisoners than regular. Okay, you know what? You got something on in the background, Brother Ray Ray, because we're getting like an echo.
Yeah, well, I got to see. Hold up.
If you got your computer on, you need to turn it off and down.
Yeah, I got the phone on. I got the phone on and then the computer, so that's the echo.
Okay, yeah, I'm not hearing it now, so we good.
Yeah, of course, the computer. Yeah, so it's a difference. So what he's saying is true, you know, and they were getting them grants. They're getting them now.
Right. Yeah.
You got organizations getting them grants now, and as soon as that money dry out, everybody is on the grant chase task force, as Darren Muhammad says.
Yeah. But with
organizations
that said,
getting grants and this and that.
But with that said, this is what I always ask: Where is our plan? How are we? Because, see, we already know what the enemy's going to do. We know how they're going to do it and all of that. But the thing is, what are we going to do? And you know, in regards to the issue, and that, and we were talking about emergency response and preparedness. Now, we had a sister, a Brother Shepherd, I'm sure, remembers. Our sister, Sheila Brown, did an excellent, excellent presentation. I think you came on that too, Brother Ray Ray. She did it on Zoom.
Right.
And that was one of the first, you know, to let people begin to see. It was thorough. It was on point. And so, again, we got to now do this in our communities. So I'm saying that because she's available. She's available to come to whatever community folks want to either bring her in directly or if they want to set up something on Zoom. She has introductory stuff, but then she has extensive stuff as well, you know. So my point is, when are we going to start doing this kind of stuff?
Well, like you said, not everybody going to get saved, but people don't even know how to get to it. They can't get out the city. They don't even know where to tap into these bridges.
Wow.
Can't get to the major deacon. Cool.
So that's why I'm saying, we see, this is what I've realized. If we know that this is a problem, then the folks that know this is a problem, they unfortunately or fortunately, whichever one works best for you, we're the ones that got to do something. Because we already know that other folks are not. And so it kind of falls on us. It's like anything else. You're not going to give a kindergarten student, for the most part, you're not going to give them geometry. Not really.
No.
I mean, I'm not saying it can't happen or shouldn't, but I'm just saying, generally speaking,
no.
You're not going to give somebody in kindergarten, you know, calculus. And that's kind of what's going on. We can't have these expectations for whatever reason when we're dealing with certain mentalities for whatever reason. So people got to step up and do what we have to do. So family, I don't know how y'all feel about that, but, again, this is the litmus scale that's getting ready to pop up, meaning we're going to get ready to see.
I don't think people even care, Sister Filet, because you try to put on programs consistent, your program. People have asked me to do whatever that 501 skis. I said no, because from what I was told, that if you start talking about stuff that ain't consistent, it ain't going to happen.
Right.
So you try
to
spend your own money to do that. So you're 100% right.
That's right.
But
here's the thing. Our people didn't have 501s years ago, and they did stuff. So, I mean, it's up to us to be, you know, one of the principles of Kwanzaa is what? Kaumba, creativity. So it's really up to us.
Years ago, we knew we was under the gun. It seemed like now people don't think they're under the gun anymore. We knew what was going on. But it seems like now it just ain't happening.
Well, again, I'm saying those of us that do know, Brother Ray Ray, unfortunately, we've got to come up with some other things, applications or something. And I'm not saying that we're not doing, as you're doing the Mackey Study Group and Sister Keisha and Brother Mike and, you know, of course, Brother Shep and Brother Cole. I mean, we're all doing things, but unfortunately, we have now got to up the ante. Because you're right, people either don't care or won't do or whatever. Whatever the scenario is, that's okay. I mean, it's not okay, but the point is, we got to now fill in some of these gaps. It's just that simple. It can't be, well, they don't care, they don't look. When you have a child, you already know the child is not going to do what you want that child to do.
That's right.
They're not just going to happen. I mean, you know, right off the bat, I mean, at some point they do, at some point. And even that can get shaky. And so, unfortunately, that's the kind of mentality or behavior we're dealing with. And so we have to, as the parent, as the mother and father, we're the ones got to come up with, well, we got some unruly children over here that we got to deal with. So how are we going to do that? We can't just leave it at, well, they're not going to cooperate. Right? I mean, you know, you got grandchildren. I see you with your grandchildren, so you know what I'm talking about. They want to do. But you still have to, you know, move in and still do it. Mm-hmm. You can't just let them run, you know. So that's what I'm saying in regards to our people, unfortunately. We can't get into, well, you know, they this age, they that age. We got to deal with what is the mentality and then deal with the reality of that. Because if we do that, then who going to do it? The enemy ain't going to do it. You know, it's up to us. So these are some of the think tanks we're going to have to create. But Brother Ray, always thank you much. Love you much. What you got coming up this week for the Mackey Study Group?
We got Dr. Mundelson is going to do a 25th anniversary on Samuel Carson, Sonny Carson.
Oh, okay. Cool. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, let folks know
that's going to be Wednesday, I believe it's the 26th. And my email for the Million Women's March family is, my phone number is 917-704-9498. And you can call that number and drop your number to me and I'll send you the information. The last two lectures on the history of Alton Maddox was excellent via Mike Graves, part one and two. That's on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we could keep stuff going, you know, and, you know, but stuff is happening in Philly, stuff is happening all over, and some people is waking up, but some people is not. Bottom line is you have a Brother Shep giving this stuff on 10:30 on a Saturday night. The majority of the dedicated people to Blog Talk and Million Women's March and support you, Sister Empress, in your program, this is Saturday night at 10:30. The average person ain't thinking about porting you.
But you know what, Brother Ray, we have other stuff. You know, it's just like we'll be doing things.
Right. You're talking Saturday night at 10:30. The other programs is one thing, but I'm talking about this one in particular.
Right, right.
Can I just interject something real quick?
Even though
this might be 10 o'clock or 10:30, folks in California, it's 7 o'clock. So if you get the matter of doing your outreach and your promotion, then you're going to pick up the whole other half of this country. That's going to come
exactly,
in.
Right.
But we got to promote it.
Right.
We got to promote it. And we got to put the word out.
Ashe.
Before I get off, you know, Brother Shep, New York, Bed-Stuy, the people that's dedicated, we know, but the changing of the community, and like I said, it's a new, different type of black folk in the sky. Basically, talking about the new. It's a new Negro in Detroit, in New York, and Bed-Stuy, and East New York, and all that. And they just ain't with it.
When them troops start marching through the streets, they gonna wake up.
You was at the Magnolia Tree when they were trying to get the funds for the Magnolia Tree. They shouldn't have to, because you know for a fact any Jewish operation don't have to, is never in trouble. And we know the Jews want them buildings over there. I grew up on Lafayette Avenue, 648 Lafayette. 648 Lafayette, I grew up. I ran those streets. I played baseball for the Bombers Little League right there. They shouldn't have to beg for no money. And that lady sitting up talking about calling out some old silly rappers talking about they supposed to give something. They ain't supposed to give nothing. That money is available for Magnolia House. But
that's
they play
right.
games. But let the Jews ask for something and they start bending over and taking their pants down and do anything. The mayor and all of them, the city council and all of them, do anything for them Jews. That institution shouldn't have no problem asking for some dropping the bucket money. And you, we know they have slush money to they have slush money. The representatives and city council and in the state have slush money, and they're going to sit up there talking that nonsense. That's why I left there. I didn't even want to hear them. Some rappers need to give up some money for Magnolia House. Come on. The dog and phony show. But let one of them old small hats ask for something. They jump over the hills. They don't have to do nothing, and they give them Jews. Them blacks are just as disgusting over there. From the mayor on down, bending over for them Jews. And they want them two buildings on Lafayette. They've been one of them.
Hell, they already got the park.
I said,
what happened to King's Park? I see all these white folks in there hanging out. I was like, what the hell happened?
They took the piece of the park and made it a playground for some old raggedy dogs, and you got the blacks all up in there buck dancing with their dogs and happy because their dogs is running around with some black dogs running around with some white dogs.
They did the same thing in D.C. Do y'all remember Malcolm X Park in D.C.? Have you been there lately?
Oh, no. Are you serious?
Oh, no. Man. And I remember when we went, the UAM went with, I'm going to tell you what happened, because when we went with Dr. Browder, and he with the lecture on the Masonic hookup of D.C. with the 15th Street Meridian. So we went up in that park, and it was my first time. And I saw the police car, and I saw all the whites out there, and I go up to Browder just as stupid. What is going on here? And Browder looked at me, and he said, my brother, we're in the hood in D.C., and the place is called Malcolm X Park. And back in the day, this side of the park, the women was doing what they doing. That side of the park, the crackheads and the drug dealers and all kind of stuff was going on in the park. And he said these whites came up in there with their brooms. They cleaned that park up. They went to the local police station and demanded, and they sat a police car up there, and he said, brother, the name of the park is Malcolm X Park, and the drug dealers was in there, and the crackheads, and the phony gangsters that would kill a black man in a minute, and the local Boulay politicians cleaned that park up for them whiteys, and then the blacks was mad. In the name of, and I had to shut my mouth.
Well, they now
you know what?
That part, I
remember that part. This is the last thing I'm going to say. I remember from when we used to have African Liberation Day there. African People's Revolutionary Party.
Yeah.
Yep, it was the whole weekend. We'd be at Howard University. I saw Gil Scott-Heron and Barry McKeever and Peter Tosh, you know, everybody would perform one day, and then that whole day, everyone dressed in white in that park, from top to bottom, nothing but Pan-Africanism. But that was the 70s.
That's, All right, Sammy. Well, listen, we want to get back to Brother Kofi. He's been hanging on in there, and we want to get this report from him about the last week's buff. And also, we're going to go back to the question of how do we bring Black nationalism, Pan-Africanism into the 21st century. Brother Ray Ray, always love you, my brother. Always good talking with you. And, hey, you know, we're going to keep doing what we're doing, Black man.
Yeah. And sorry I missed a few weeks, you know.
No problem. Well, you know, everything is in the archives, so it's all good. That's what we tell people. If you missed the live one, it's okay, because we got 13 years in the archives for you. So it's all good.
Yeah, I love the program. I love the people. And, you know, okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank the speaker.
All right.
And Gary, I want to send my greetings, brother. He's a Clark Club, too. He was part of our Black Student Union, Ed Hunter.
Yeah. Okay.
All right,
I'm going to be quiet now because I'm going to be listening, Sister Chi, but I got some typing and stuff to do right now. But I'm going to be listening.
All right, we're going to bring Brother Kofi in and get this report because we want to know what happened last week, of course, with the 44th year commemoration of the National Black United Front. Brother Kofi, what you got for us?
Black Power again. I am Kofi Taharka. I have the privilege, the honor, and the responsibility of being the national chairman of the National Black United Front. And we were able to convene, have our 44th annual convention July the 7th through the 9th in Pittsburgh, actually right outside of Pittsburgh in McKeesport, which is a town outside of Pittsburgh at the Healthy Village Learning Institute. The Healthy Village Learning Institute, which is a tremendous community center. I say it's a combination between a museum, a community center, a training center that has been raised up by Baba Keith Murphy there that services youth in the community with after-school programs, summer school programs. It's a huge three-story building full of African art, artifacts, drums, culture. Also, they acquire a significant amount of technology, podcast equipment, video equipment, things that youth are into. And when I say drums, I'm not just saying, you know, solely djembe drums. I'm talking about the huge drums, huge African drums and other artifacts. So it was a tremendous setting for us to have the convention there in the first place. And it was under the servantship of our sister who was there in Pittsburgh, Sister Lisa Quinn, who did a majority of the organizing around the national convention this year. The first day on the 7th, we had a Black Unity reception with the keynote speaker being the chairman emeritus, Reverend Herbert Daughtry out of the House of the Lord Church there in Brooklyn. That was also the day that we got the word of the transition of Dr. Motulu Shakur on Friday, July the 7th. So we were able to do a number of things, ceremonial throughout the convention to acknowledge him, to acknowledge, honor his contribution to the liberation movement with a drum tribute from the youth, Word of Silence. We already had incorporated into the convention a small measure, but significant nonetheless, that all attendees were invited to sign on to cards that we have for a number of the political prisoners and prisoners of war. So that set the stage. Hearing from Reverend Daughtry at 92 years old, we were looking to understand, and we know that he has been in our movement for many, many, many decades as mm-hmm. to what some of his thoughts, ideas, and what have you were about where we stand today, what we need to do. Now, Reverend Daughtry, was interesting in some of his remarks. What he talked about is he was challenging the group on both major days of the convention is that if we are black nationalists then, Pan-Africanists, mm-hmm. and some people there consider themselves revolutionary nationalists and all of whatever mm-hmm. the other ideological titles, that how is what we're doing relating to the masses of our people? And are we cutting ourselves off from segments of our community because we're so steeped into our ideological, theological outlook that it doesn't have any relevancy? And I think you and Shep were talking about, you know, different things taking place. We have a program here. We have a march there, a different activity without having a certain level of consistency. But that's one of the things that, you know, Reverend Daughtry was talking to us about throughout the convention. We moved on mm-hmm. To Saturday. We had one of the things about the Healthy Village Living Institute that I thought was significant. They had a number of their youth that participated throughout the weekend, and these were youth who live in the community. Sometimes if you've been around the country, you may go someplace and within independent schools or in some places or different activities that take place, what I've observed is they may be the children of people that are in the movement, which is great.
Right.
But also right. these children actually live in the community, which is the neighborhood, the hood, right there
That's
in
right.
McKeesport, right outside. So I took notice of that. And then, as I said, the interwovenness of what they have created, where you cannot help but to feel our Africanity when you're in this facility. In addition, they have added various technologies and skills that can be beneficial to the young people and that keep younger people's attention. So it was a very interesting mix there. We did have some representation from a number of different organizations that were there that sent representatives, and then also some that sent solidarity statements. I think on Saturday, one of the more significant things that took place was an intergenerational dialogue between some of these veterans of mm-hmm. the movement and some of the younger people. And it mainly centered around, through the workshops that the younger people had, they came up with questions that they asked. Some of the questions were things like, what do you think is the best book to read to understand our people or our movement? What was slavery like? Or what do you think about slavery? What is the biggest challenge for your particular organization? And of course, you know how it is when you get in a room with a lot of organizers or people who've been in the movement for a long time. The facilitators had to, you know, make sure and remind many of the adults that, you know, to make their answers relevant to young people. And these are people 7 to 18 years old, from 7
wow.
years old to 18 years old. So it was a very good, you know, it was a very good interaction. It's something that we look to incorporate in further activities of the National Black United Front. Of course, you know how these things go. You know, it was a lot of responses to the questions for the younger sisters and brothers, but you know, kind of ran out of time at a certain point, and there was even more, it was even more there to be delved into. But the facilitator or the coordinator of the institute there had reported to us that for many of those sisters and brothers, that it was a very powerful experience, not just that dialogue, but just to see people coming from different parts of the country, from Houston, from Kansas City, from New York, from Florida, from some different places that, from Atlanta, some different places that actually people came to and be able to interact with them. And then we moved into the evening where we got a message from Brother Charles Barron from New York City, the council member out of New York City, former state assemblyman out of New York City. And he gave a scathing account of his experience within electoral politics and with the Democratic Party, and how what he, you know, had been able to ascertain out of being engaged with in electoral politics, some of the tricks and traps that are played by the Democratic Party. The, I think one of his characteristic lines, he said, when you are an independent candidate or a candidate that doesn't toe the line for the Democratic Party, then they can, you're running against the machine. Sometimes it doesn't make a difference the candidate that you're running against. I think he said, they could put up Donald Duck, but you're running against the machine of the Democratic Party. So he gave some examples of doing his tenure of how he was able to remain independent, remain, as he describes himself, as a radical socialist, as a elected revolutionary in a position, and be able to deliver, as he said, you know, a lot of rhetoric, you know, we can offer a lot of rhetoric, but what was some of the things that he was able to deliver? So I would say, sister, that it was a very interesting contrast between Brother Charles and Reverend Daughtry's message or information that they were putting forward. And that's one of the things when you start talking about having a united front, when you say, well, how can we have some unity, is can we have unity without uniformity? Can we be able to disagree without being disagreeable? If the message, and what I found is, and through this, you know, dialogue there, but also is, that now we can have those things as long as some of these people that we're talking about or some of these groups or formations are not actually a part of the problem.
Right.
Right? That look like us, black faces in high places. And but just because they look like us doesn't mean that they're not in the, what would Steve Coakley call, buffer Negroes, right? Or the black political elite, the people who are actually standing in the way when the people rise up with righteous cries for justice, that they're the ones who stand in the way of actually, or help to stand in the way to muddy the waters, confuse people, and what have you. So those are, you know, some of the ongoing challenges and what have you. And then finally, we did, as MBUF is not a religious organization. There are a lot of people from different spiritual backgrounds, but we did have a spiritual ceremony, outdoor ceremony on Sunday with some of the Ifa practitioners there, and just, you know, kind of to close out everything during the weekend. So again, you know, it was energizing for the members that are in the National Black United Front. I think that based on reports that we've got from the people who were visiting outside of the organization, they were encouraged. It is a firm challenge for us then to, as we go back to the various places and look at the capacity that we have as an organization, and then what other people have is to see what are very practical ways that that interaction can be built on. So I'm back right in Houston. I spoke 2 weeks ago when I was, or 2 or 3 weeks ago before the convention, about some of the programming and things that we're doing here, that we strive for what you and Shep were talking about with it, the level of consistency. When there's, you know, when it's not trending, when it's not, you know, when it's not something that's hot, it's not clickbait for everybody, is having a certain level of consistency with our Feed the Hood project, having a level of consistency with our Sundiata Akoli Shaka Sankofa Self-Determination Community Garden, having a level of consistency with our annual Sankofa caravan to the ancestors. And then you all were speaking about then how being independent and in both his, the sisters and brothers that came together in 1980, they saw very clearly that we needed to be financially independent. So we're not ones out chasing the grants. One of the brothers, it was a very interesting comment that the brother made about, you know, the grant. So this is like self-funded. So then how are we going to do all of that and survive ourselves? These are constant questions. And then another big question, and it really a youth asked it, but this is, I think, a question movement-wide, and you and Shep were touching on it, is how is it that we have the intergenerational components to our formations and to our movements so that it's not, as people get older, people make their transition, that these things don't die on the vine and keep people engaged. We can attract younger people. And I could talk for a long time about some points that you and Shep and the caller were making, because, you know, we live in a hurricane zone. When we start talking about basic survival, emergency preparedness, food, clothing, shelter, safety, security, we've experienced in a lot of times that. But gaining younger people's participation, but also keeping them engaged, and I think that's a, you know, that's an ongoing challenge. I'm not of the 60s era generation. I came right behind that generation, though. And then the generation coming behind me and the generation coming. Right. I think, you know, every generation, you know, the era helps make generations. But there's some things that are certainly tried and true in getting the proper, we call it political, historical, cultural, and spiritual education is key to that. But then so that people don't get so easily confused, that we don't get so easily confused by the newest thing that just pops up and looks good. And I was thinking earlier, not to get too far off track, but it was some things that you were talking about with the fact that George Floyd was primarily raised here in Houston, and some of the things that we observed from the city government, the state government, in order to contain the people at that time when people were very much out in the streets. But I think, you know, that kind of summarizes the weekend, the things that, you know, we are willing to kind of talk about publicly for the convention. And now that challenge is there for us as to, how do we do what we were already doing, but in some ways be able to build our capacity to take advantage of the good experience that we had there in Pennsylvania/McKeesport?
Okay. Wow. That's,
you know, Brother Kofi, you hit on so many areas that, as you said, Brother Shep and I have been talking about it and others. And the question has to be, how are we going to now proceed? I mean, the National Black United Front laid a tremendous groundwork, you know, is laying a tremendous groundwork. I'm going to find a clip, hopefully, before we close out, of a brother that I was very familiar with here in Philadelphia. And I was a student when the Black United Front Philadelphia was in place. And, you know, and again, I want people to hear the kind of mentality from an elected official, which is very different from today, totally different from today. I'm going to play a clip, hopefully, before we close out, from State Representative David P. Richardson, who was, you know, came out of the Black militant, you know, era. His family, Dr. Ed Robinson, his Uncle Kelvin Robinson, that started the Pan-African Federation here in Philly. My point is, we had people who walked the walk and talked the talk and really did some things. And so what I'm pointing out is, being a young student and watching brothers and sisters, you know, do these things, you know, go into the political arena and make it very clear, though, and you'll hear this clip, hopefully I'll find it, with Dave saying, I'm a Black man first, and then a state rep. You don't hear these people talk about that like that today. And so we want to now, as we proceed, and I'm going back to Brother Kofi and also Brother Shipp, if you want to chime in on this, and Brother Ray Ray, how do we now proceed? Because we must. Because if the younger folks do not see this clarity that we're talking about and then not be all meshed in, and I'm not saying there can't be times when we all get along or we all come together, whatever. I'm not saying that. But other groups of people have a distinct mode, even though they may have coalition or solidarity with other things or whatever. But our struggle based on our history, our ancestors, our culture is getting mixed in with a bunch of bull stuff. Unnecessarily, to the degree that it is hindering the justice that is due from our ancestors. And so I have to ask this question, what are we going to do to a greater extent? Because you all are all, obviously, everybody on this call tonight has demonstrated and said what they're doing. We know that. But I'm saying we got to up it, y'all. We got to up it now to a degree where we know who and what our enemies are all across the board. This ain't nothing new. Carter G. Woodson told us the miseducation of the Negro. As for those who do not know who wrote the Willie Lynch letter, it was Nana, Kwabi Nana Shanti, one of my elders. So we know about the Willie Lynch chip. We know about what happened with Nat Turner. We know that Harriet Tubman said she could have freed more if they only knew they were slaves. So after 100 years, what are we talking about doing? As Brother Kofi just said, what mechanisms? And I know we can't have that conversation all on the air, but I'm just saying, we have got to begin to address these things. And as I said, Brother Kofi, I don't know if you heard me earlier, come this Sunday, we will begin to launch for the sisters, but there'll be other components for all of our people. But for the sisters, come this Sunday, not tomorrow Sunday, but next Sunday, we'll be launching the Shekmet Society. Why? Because we have to let people know, if you think you're going to keep raping, killing, beating, exploiting our women to the best of our ability, we're going to stick something on you. I have to say this stuff because it's not getting any less. And we got to do something. So if somebody else has some other ideas, y'all come on with it. But for right here, right now, for us, for those who believe in prayer, for those who believe in meditation, for those who believe in whatever, we're saying channel some of that against our enemies. Yes, I said it. I'm not a punk. Stop on that note. Brother Kofi, what are we going to do? And again, was any of this, and I'm sure it was, maybe there's something you could share with us, because I know we can't share everything. We can't share everything, you know, on a broadcast. But are there any suggestions or ideas that came up whereby, you know, it led to how are we going to move forward in the 21st century?
Yeah, I think that with the various representatives that were there, what took place was that they articulated some of what their positions are, and that there was a diversity, some level of diversity in positions. What I think that the challenges on InBev, since we convened that particular meeting, then to look forward to how do we build points of unity? If we are all in various segments and silos, different parts of the country, different parts of the world, then how is it that you build unity? And I make a distinction between building some level of operational or functional unity to coalitions. Coalitions are like single issues, right? We can have
right.
a coalition around some particular point of interest, and it can be a very broad-based, diverse coalition. Building some functional unity it takes a little bit more, but you got to start someplace. And
right.
I think that's the challenge. That's the challenge for us. There was nothing that I recall that was groundbreaking or earth-shaking that came out of the particular gathering that, as Reverend Daughtry said, when he got up to speak after hearing people around the table, he said he had been in that room many times before, right? When he was saying that he had basically heard a lot of, you know, what had been said, given his advanced age and time in the movement. But I think the challenges, there was nothing that I heard, at least, that said we didn't come out and say we're going to have this resolution and we're going to come out and do this particular thing that's going to change
right.
the entire trajectory of our movement. But what we did do is make each other a little more familiar with each other, and then as the conveners, the challenge is on us for finding points of unity. I learned this being an MBO because I traveled all around the country and stayed with people in their houses, in their basements, and met other sisters and brothers from other groups all around the country, is that we have to get back more to the face-to-face interactions that have us be able to actually know each other. The technology is great, right? We can get everything
right,
from
right.
around the world, but we got to get back to the more face-to-face interactions, and that's one of the things that I would see as being important for us moving forward in the 21st century is being, you know, we could get on a million Zoom calls with each other. There's Zoom, you know, Zoom everything. And that's cool, but it doesn't replace our face-to-face interactions. So that's like one of the things of different, you know, ideas. But a lot of the challenges on us as the conveners to have things that are more concrete. And we're looking at a few things. We're not just particularly ready to speak about them publicly right now. Yep.
Right. And yeah, and that's what I meant. I mean, I know some things we can't, you know, really discuss publicly or openly. But, you know, again, this is, you know, for lack of a better time period, this is 2023. And, I mean, this thing, and I totally agree, we definitely need to do more direct contact and so forth. But at the same time, I just think that, we're something has really gone awry in that everything else is advancing, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes mm-hmm. to our motor operations and what we need to do about this, that, and the other, we keep having these conversations, and there's not a lot getting done. And I'm saying this, seeing it, and I know younger people are saying it and seeing it, because I was saying the same thing when I was coming in the struggle. And so here we are now kind of really rehashing, regurgitating some of the same things. Before you respond to that, Brother Kofi, I want to share this with folks, because this was 95. Check this out. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Volume. Hold on. Hold up. Wait a minute. I'm not getting my volume. Something's wrong here. Here we go. Stop.
Prima Mia. Prima Mia now. Brothers and sisters, comrades, it's really my pleasure to be here. One of your state representatives from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I am ashamed to be a state representative in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania with a chump right over the wrist at the helm. I'm ashamed. But I wanted to come here today to let you know that some of us are not afraid, that even though we may be elected, we'll say what's on our mind. But we must understand that we are freedom fighters first, and then all the other things come next. That I'm a black man first, and then a state representative. I don't confuse the two. And I think it's time for us to wake up and realize and understand that you got a lot of us that are willing to go to battle because of freedom. Ain't gonna never be free unless we take it. There's too many of us sitting around thinking that it's gonna come to us on some damn silver platter. Wake up, you fool, and understand this man has no respect for you. None whatsoever. And he will continue to do what they do to move you only because they feel that you don't have no heart. Well, let me just say this to y'all.
Now, With that said, what are your thoughts about that, Brother Kofi? You heard this, brother, 27 years ago, right? So today, here we are having these conversations about what we need to do, and we should, but I'm saying this has already been said. To the degree of this was a black elected official. So the question has to be, what are we doing? What are we saying? You see, and I mean, I'm not about us per se, because, you know, we know what we're doing and what we're saying. But I'm just saying, to keep, you know, I don't know. Brother Kofi, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that because I don't know specifically a lot about that particular brother, but he obviously had very strong and principled articulation of a position of being in the Black Liberation Movement. At the meeting that we just had, there are people mm-hmm. who are working to have independence from the Democratic Party and struggling
okay.
with that, right?
Okay.
Struggling with being able to get on balance, get on ballots. And one of the discussions that was had and is then being had, have we just seeded the ground of electoral politics and said, because there's a lot of people say, I don't even want to deal with it. It doesn't even,
right.
We don't think anything of substance can come out of it. And the argument
right.
was being put forth particularly by National African Independence Party with Brother Shep mentioned, Brother Khalid Rahim, and some others, is that we just kind of ceded the electoral political ground to the black political elite now, because for a number of different reasons, and that kind of ties in with Charles Barron, do we want to really do the work in that arena now, today, that would actually have an insurgent type of candidate? I can't think of, I stand to be corrected, you know, Charles Barron was one of the few people still in 2023 who's still holding the line or a similar line to the brother that you just played. I don't know
mm-hmm.
what everything is like in the political arena around the country, whether there's too many, you know, too many people that are holding that particular line. And I think the point that he made was the point that I was making about Charles's, and I hate to be repetitive, but is for some people, the goal seems to be to get in office, not
right.
the broader goals of our liberation movement, and using whatever can be extracted out of the electoral political arena for our movement. So then, even sometimes people that go in, they might not be nationalists or pan-Africanists or revolutionary nationalists or even progressives, but they may be honest people trying to do something and then get into office, and then the goal becomes to stay in the office, not to serve the constituents or to conserve their people or being part and parcel of some broader movement. So there were a number of people. In fact, a sister out of Florida that ran with the African Socialist Party, who is an unindicted co-conspirator in that case against Omali Yeshiteli and them. She was there.
Yeah.
And she
yeah.
had run for office, a young sister, right? Ran for the city council, I think, down there in St. Petersburg. So she seemed to have a lot of clarity on the electoral, you know, arena. Of course, they have come under attack, as those of us in the movement know. I mean, that's what, you know, I look at particular areas that I know about. There are some people, let's just say, here in Houston who are fed up with the status quo, who are engaging themselves in electoral politics. They have not been, to date, they have not been successful in getting into any of those particular positions. But there are some
right.
younger people who kind of peep the game, and they might not have the same politics that you and I have, but they definitely are not, they disagree with the status quo that they have seen and are
right.
engaging in that particular arena. So, I mean,
right.
that's what I, you know, say about it. I think, you know, listening to the brother, it makes me wonder, okay, so what happened with him? What happened
that's
with that particular brother, you know, in the electoral sphere? And,
so,
you know, I think that would be a good question.
I'm glad you raised that, Brother Kofi, because that's a very good question and is also a very interesting situation, like a few other situations. Let's put it this way. For the time that he was very active, he was very, very progressive. We had something here in Philadelphia called Save Our Land, and we literally had in our community a security force. And so this, again, was when I was just started coming into the struggle. What ended up happening to Brother Dave, we called him Brother Dave, even though he was, in fact, an elected official, state rep. He came out of what was known years ago. Again, this was before my time, but there was something here in Philly called the Black House. And this is where a lot of the, you know, so-called militants and stuff came out of, and he came out of that. That era and that time period. But to answer your question, shortly after that speech, that was his last public speech, interestingly enough. He supposedly died from a heart attack approximately 6 weeks later. Okay. So to answer your question, that's what happened. Right after that speech, approximately 6 weeks later. Yep. So, you know, again, these are
well,
some of the things
his,
that...
he said in his speech, one of the things, now that's the only time I've heard that, right? He said in his speech that we got some sisters and brothers in Philadelphia that ain't afraid to rumble.
That's right. That's right.
With
see, that's why.
Cops,
you
or
know,
not afraid of the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police.
That's right.
They're very powerful at every locale, statewide,
that's
and
right.
nationally.
And stand
in the way a lot of times. You know, like with all of the protests and everything, it took me some time being involved in the movement to understand why even small reforms wouldn't happen. We're not talking about structural change, just small reforms. It was because in large part or in part because of the those Fraternal Order of Police and their influence in the political arena.
That's
and
right.
that goes across the country.
Absolutely. And this is why, again, it behooves us in this day and age. Here you have something like Fannie Lou Hamer, and then later Brother Alton Maddox, he started something called the Freedom Party, you know, in New York. My point is, it doesn't appear that we're even attempting to think and be out the box. And at this stage of the game, you know, I'm not even suggesting that there has to be an alternative party. I mean, it should be, obviously, but I'm saying at the same time, aren't we smart enough to run our own people? And even though we know, and as you mentioned earlier, and I think Shep did as well, we know that even to run our own people doesn't necessarily mean, well, we started with Obama. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be any change or any production or anything like that. But using this example of Dave, of Brother Dave, surely there's some stuff that can get done.
But the people have to be strong enough to also keep them strong. That's what he taught us. He taught us that even though he's going in those circles and he got to deal with all of this and that, there has to be a power base of the people.
Right.
See, and that's
right.
Where I'm not seeing in our communities, we're not seeing that kind of independent voice in our community that'll shut stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
See,
mm-hmm.
They've had that. We had that here in Philly. That's why a lot of times when people hear me so, you know, enraged or outraged, it's because we had some folk here in this city, they were no joke. And now these old we find people, it's sickening. You see, and this is what has happened all over the country.
Well, you mentioned, or was mentioned earlier about the political education. So I don't think that we can assume anybody's level of political education, right? That this is lived experiences that you have, and there's some lived experiences that I've had. And as I say, you know, I'm coming behind that 60s, 70s era generation, but also have studied.
Me too.
Right?
Right.
And I think sometimes it's a mistake that I've made in the past is subconsciously just assuming that some people may know what it is that I know. So when we talk about understanding this, then what happens when somebody raises to a threat level, whether it's a organization, a formation, a group, a political figure like the brother that you played, then there are any number of tactics that are used in order to neutralize them. And anybody coming with that particular type of energy and the knowledge and the principles, then a part of the political education has to be that these are lines of attack that come when you raise to a certain threat level to the status quo. And the attack is very likely to come in multiple ways, but it will likely to come from people that look like us, not from necessarily outsiders. Now we're dealing with two. I'm going to put this on the table just for this discussion, but this has brought up the whole concept of fascism that is taking place in the consolidation of the far right-wing forces within this country. We see being manifest by some of the things that we see come out of Texas and Florida, and I'm sure other states where it's almost like the end of Reconstruction again.
Right.
In your face. It's not covered up. Supreme Court, the same thing. These things are not covered up with, but there's the level of consolidation of some of those right-wing forces and how we view that in our political historical analysis, and then getting back to our own need for self-determination, self-defense, and all of those things that we've done in the past. I'm just throwing out a few things that you're making me think about, right? I saw the piece on it was a poster. One good thing about technology, one of those memes, and it had Bantu Steve Biko, right? It said the most dangerous thing in the hands of the oppressor is the mind
That's
of the
right.
oppressed.
That's right. Yep. Yeah.
So I think it's a constant, continuous battle. And then further, I would say this, that the ways that consuming information today is somewhat different with all of this technology. So I'm sure you've seen one of these things on some of this social media where someone, a blogger or internet influencer or somebody will take and make a reel that can be a minute or less long and break down very quickly with bullet points a particular historical topic or a contemporary topic. And
right.
whereas you and I might spend time reading a book, a lot of people are consuming information that way. So how then do we,
right.
how do we use that and not let it use us if we want to engage
right.
in that particular area, depending on
right.
our goals, you know? And do we have the skills within our various groups to, if we choose to put information out like that, that then could draw people into something deeper, like what Shep was talking about the political education groupings that he had been a part of.
Right.
That's some of the things that I see because, and I, you know, it's, there's some very, very talented people out there. Take some, hit it with some bullet points, and boom, and that's how a lot of the public and a lot of our younger people particularly are consuming information, whether it be positive or instructional or political or negative. It's coming
right, right.
quick, fast, in short, you know, a burst.
Right.
But I think that's a tactical question, too, is to see, it can be just a tactical question how much you want to engage in that arena or not in that arena. But if so, having a particular purpose, it's like propaganda, right? It's like
right,
the
right.
newspapers of old, the newspapers from the UNIA, the newspapers from the Nation, the newspapers from the Panther Party, the newspapers or you know, these different things that were used to get to people in this information age. I think there's still a place for all of those things, but how do we engage in that? And how do we use it and not let it use us?
So, and you're right, my brother, that has been the question. And, you know, again, I think some of us we're literally practicing those kinds of things. For example,
mm-hmm.
I only
mm-hmm.
use Facebook when I
mm-hmm.
want to go and post something or check something. I don't be on Facebook to have no, I call it fake book. I don't be on there to have no conversation with you. I'm not going to be on there talking about what I did yesterday, last week, what I'm going to do tomorrow, none of that. I will go on there to check out if there's any new information or I need to post some information. But I'm not having no conversations with you. You see, so my point is some of us are very clear. It's like anything else. You use a car to go for you to go places. You don't use a car just to, you know, do this other stuff in. Most of
mm-hmm.
eat in your car or you know, you use it for a particular reason and then you're done with it. And so this is what some of us not only convey to younger folk, but we literally embrace these concepts. You see, again, the challenge for me, Brother Kofi, is that we say we come from the greatest people on the planet. Yet at the very same time, we'll talk about, you know, what we got, all this other stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but I think I'm smarter than that. And I think I'm smarter than that because my parents are smarter than that, right? So I'm not settling with, yeah, well, you know, I'm not settling with that. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'm not negating it. I'm not, you know, acting like it don't exist. I most certainly do know that it is. But at the same time, I am constantly going to be trying to figure out how we're going to do this thing. Because I say I am the descendant of one of the, if not the greatest people on the planet, definitely the top-notch one. We can't have it both ways anymore. It can't be, yeah, we come from and our people do. We can no longer say that and then not figure out how we're going to kick this devil behind. It's just not making any sense. And I know it's not that easy, family, so don't get me wrong. I'm not foolish. But I'm saying there's got to be some greater effort, obviously. Because this thing is getting worse and worse and worse. I'm seeing more of our people with blue hair, purple hair, yellow hair, eyelashes coming out the woodworks. And I'm not knocking certain things. I'm just saying some of the stuff is getting excessive. I'm not talking about, you know, you want to, you know, beautify, I'm not talking about, but some of this stuff is absolutely ridiculous, and y'all know it. Okay, so this stuff is getting worse. We're getting ready to, on Tuesday, announce that we're getting ready to be a part of the education and the fighting back for the chemical relaxers. Right? There's a whole thing going on with that, and we're getting in that because, you know, some of us have been talking about it for a while anyway, but now there is literally a national campaign going on that is talking about the damage of chemical relaxers where our girls and women were targeted, exploited, and in some cases had to use either that or a wig in order to get a job. You couldn't go up in certain locations with, you know, regular natural hair. That wasn't happening. So again, are we going to proceed? Because now, do people think that glue that they put on their eyelashes and in their head, do they really think that stuff is going to be beneficial? These are just conversations that we need to have about health. So again, I'm saying we're not doing some things that we really can and should be doing. Billy, we're going to get ready to close out because we have run out of time, but I do see someone in queue, and I don't want to not recognize their question or comment. So I'm going to open up your mic, caller at 9462. We don't have much time, but I definitely did not want to leave you hanging. 9462, your mic is open.
All right, then I'll make this brief. I'm Elder Mama Condi, and when you said Save Our Land Community Patrol, when you said Black United Front with Reverend Daughtry, yeah. I had to push one. when I was a teenager, I lived in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I was a member of Save Our Land Community Patrol. I knew Dave Richardson. I used to spend a lot of time in the bookstore, in the basement at Reverend Daughtry's church. I mean, you're talking about things that we did and were available to us when we were young. Now I'm 71 years old, and I'm looking around the so-called community to see what young people have in their neighborhoods that we had. When I was a young person in the neighborhood, I could walk 3 blocks to get to the UNIA building. I could walk to the corner to get to the Church of the Advocate. I could walk 1/3 of a block around the corner, and there was the Black Panther office. I could walk 1 block in the opposite direction, and there was the Moorish bookstore. I mean, we don't have things in the community like we used to when I was young, and it made a great bit of difference. You know, I grew up with elders like Nama Ansa, Nana Tanchi Ampong, Queen Mother Moore, Baba John Henry Clark. These were our elders. We sat at their feet and communicated with them. Now, young people, they may know their books, maybe, but they don't have the access that we had as young people. And I think it's our responsibility as elders to be those elders for these young people now so that they have an actual personal experience and they can learn from the example that we set with how we live our lives. I yield. Thank you.
Hey, Mama Condi. Mama Condi,
yes,
this is Brother Kofi in Houston.
Yes, sir.
Hello, can she hear me? Yeah.
Yeah, we
don't
hear you,
Baba. Don't you? Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I've heard you over the years myself. I'm in Houston, Texas with the National Black United Front. But I've heard you over the years. And don't you know that song about Zaid Malik Shakur?
Zaid Malik Shakur, have you heard the name before? He took the stand of an African man, and he joined the BLA. For liberty or death is the only way not to be a slave. May 1973, the pigs decided to bust the three. Sundiata, Asada, and Zayd Malik struggled against the enemy. How stupid the troopers in 73 who brought this plight to be. Well, a cop shot Asada, Zayd Malik shot a cop. They shot Zayd Malik, and it still hasn't stopped. I said, Zayd Malik Shakur, have you heard the name before? Yes.
Gosh, hey.
I appreciate it. See, but that's from listening and listening to shows around the country and knowing who you are, even though I never met you.
Wow. Yes, sir. I am humbled. I got tears in my eyes right now. You know, I'm one of those people who like to work in the black ground for the most part. And I like the power of the caboose, because when the engine gets in trouble, the caboose is the one that pulls it out of trouble. I like that position. I like that position.
Hey, I wanted to tell our sisters and brothers to visit us at mbuff.net. You can check us out at mbuff.net if those who are listening. And then I also wanted to say, the brother was saying the show was on at 10:30 at night, right? Mm-hmm. So then, the people that are listening and engaged, I say they're probably pretty serious people. So that's good.
That's right. That's why I did it that way, because I mean, you got all kinds of stuff, and so I need to be with people of a certain type of commitment. And lastly, do y'all remember when Bob Laws used to come on Night Talk?
Oh yeah, Night Talk. I was a part of the Night Talk family.
Sure, yeah,
you know
we had a good
time.
Yeah, did anybody know
one of my babies on his show?
Yeah,
people came on just to hear me breathing.
That's right. Folks
in labor.
Folks all over the country used to tune in to Night Talk. And
that's
that
right.
Had to be 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so all that stuff about, oh, it's late. Negro, please. No, I'm not having it. So I did it intentionally because, again, and this is what I was saying about what we need to do with some other things. Some of us need to come together. This is not for everybody. Everything is not for everybody. But the ones that get what I'm talking about, we need to have a sit down. We need to have an endeavor. Right? The folk that are somewhere that, you know, that we have related to in this dialogue this evening and other dialogues, we need to have an indaba and then make some determinations. And not a whole lot of hemming and hawing. They're doing that. People have been doing that, and that's okay. But that can't be with everything. Not now. It's been a good 50 years. That we've seen in our own time certain things. We can't sit back now and act like this stuff didn't happen and then settle for whatever people are talking about now. And I'm not saying don't do that. Surely do that. But what else must we do? Family, this has been a wonderful conversation, wonderful dialogue. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. We will be black next week, and it's going to be real hot and heavy next week. Our brother Cookie, my apologies for not getting you the schedule. We had to change a lot of stuff because of the scheduling conflicts. Bob Bilal will not be joining us. There were some issues, with his health. Mama Pam Africa is not going to be joining us. Again, issues with some health. So we had to do some adjustments. But tomorrow, Baba, you will have the tentative schedule that we now have. We will kick things off at the UNIA.
on Tuesday. That's Amy Josh Garvey Day. But the official thing will happen on Thursday. That's Queen Mother Moore's Day. And so, again,
the press release and the updated editor schedule, which is now going to be more in the community. By the way, Kofi, we're literally, there's a cultural shop here in Philly called ACAF, African Community, ACA, African Community, help me, Mama Kami, African Community Arts Forum. I got it. African Community Arts Forum.
Yes, there you
ACAF.
Go.
There you go. So they have been in the community for like 45 years, you know, pretty straight, right? So we'll be doing sessions. We just kind of confirmed that. We'll literally be doing some of the sessions there, all right? And then at the UNIA, so we had to switch some things up. But, again, we'll release all of this tomorrow. And there's going to be an African marketplace at ACAF because we're going to talk about Ken Bridges, ancestor Ken Bridges, and his concept of, yes, indeed, of not just Mata, okay. But he had a theory, and it was called internal reparations. He has a speech that he did on that, at Millions for Reparations. So we're going to play that speech. We're going to play Father Paul Washington's speech on reparations and be in the community. And so vendors that are on a similar same page, they're going to be able to be set up in the context of internal reparations like Ken Bridges taught and so forth. So, again, we had to do a little readjusting, but it's there now. So we'll be sending it out tomorrow. And, by the way, Sister Angela Brown. Sister Angela Brown, she will be doing her presentation. She does an enactment of the great Honorable Amy Josh Garvey, and she'll be doing that on Tuesday. And so we'll be Zooming that as well as doing it physically at the UNIA. So, that's it. Yeah. We're moving right along, and there's a lot more coming, I can tell you, particularly with the Million Woman World March. And for folks that do not know, we have no problems with telling you now, Million Woman March was never just about the women. I mean, it certainly was. There's no question about that. We're not being apologetic about that at all. But simultaneously, it was for and about our families and communities. So now what we're saying is after evaluating some very particular things, and that's why, Baba Kofi, I'm so glad to reconnect with you because we're now going to go and get our money, okay? What I mean by that is people don't know. We intentionally did not focus, and we, you know, I guess we should have in some instances, but we did not focus on, you know, money. Our focus was on building a serious foundation with principle, with integrity, and so forth. So we never had a grant, never had corporate sponsoring. We weren't able to do different things we wanted to do, but is one thing that people can say, and that is we never sold out, y'all, in no kind of way, shape, fashion, or form. Now we get ready to do business. So you'll hear us talk about one of our new units, and our slogan is do business with the divine and the righteous USA, United Sisters of Africa. So any sister that has a product that she makes herself, soap, jewelry, clothing, you name it, we will market those products. And then we'll open it up, and it'll be for all of our people. But we have to start there to just begin to do, to get the feel of how we're going to do this on a national, international level. So when you hear Million Woman World March, it certainly is not just about a march. We're getting ready to develop independent institutions, societies, support those that are already existing along with new nations. We could say that now. We couldn't say it before, but we're saying it now. So with that said, family, we're going to close out in
We're going to have a really powerful conversation next week. We have quite a few folks that are lined up that will be joining us talking about Queen Mother Moore next week, during the whole week pretty much, but you'll be hearing more about that or be getting more information about that tomorrow. Baba Kofi, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Happy son of Black Power. Well, thank you for the opportunity to join y'all tonight.
Thank you. Absolutely. I look forward to you know, taking these next steps. I do plan a pre-kind of day tour, trying and hoping to come your way. And, you know, the tour is going to end up going into next year because we're building now. So, again, we want to connect with, you know, particularly the groups and organizations that are of similar and like mind. So we'll talk more about that in the very near future. Mama Kandi, always thanking you, always appreciating you. And, of course, Brother Ray Ray and, of course, Brother Shep, we thank all of you for making this program tonight as great as it was and is. And let folks know they can hear it anytime. Once we finish out tonight, they can just go to the archives, and it's right there. It'll be the first show that comes up by itself. Any of the other programs, you got to go into the archives and find it. But the last program always comes up first, so it'll be right there. So, all right, family, listen, feel free to contact us. Stay in touch with us, nationalmwm at AOL.com. And we will have a new website up very soon. We have extended the time for our solidarity letters, endorsement letters, and other kinds of pledges. You'll be getting more information about that later on this week as well. And the announcement for the Million Women World March will take place on Tuesday. So stay tuned. All right, family, listen, we're going to close out. Mama Kandi, you got some closing words for us?
Yes. Brother Seth and Brother Kofi, I am very humbled and grateful for the opportunity to be able to communicate with you both. And Brother Kofi, I have found your Cameroon deep, dark-toned voice to be very healing tonight, and I thank you.
Thank you, sister.
Yes.
All right. Good thanks. All right. I don't know if Brother Shep still hears us, but Brother Shep, if you
I'm here.
And you have. Okay, there you go. You got any closing comments for us?
Yeah, I was listening.
Give us some closing comments, Father.
Free them all. Free the land, free them all, free our elders. Let's get busy. All powers.
I say. All right. Baba Kofi, you got some closing comments for us. Uh-oh, might have lost them. Okay. All right, no problem. Listen, family, we're going to close out. And, again, we thank everyone for tuning in. Remember, Brother Shep, one more time. Tell them about Friday real quick. What time you going to get started?
Well, I'm going to start cooking about 1 o'clock. So the program's going to start at 7, but we'll have the history exhibit that, you know, for our struggle will be before that. Check your emails. Information should be there. And my email, if you don't have it, PantherShepCat@AOL.com. That's PantherShepCat. Panther, because I'm a panther. Shep, because my name is Shep. And cat, because a panther is a cat. And AOL, because I'm old school. PantherShepCat@AOL.com.
All right. All right, family. Well, y'all can get it right here. Hey, Brother Shep, you know what? I might be, if it's okay with you, I might bring my small crew Friday over to you.
Whatever works, sister. Do that.
All right.
We'll talk. All right.
I know that's right. All right, just say. All right, family, listen, we're closing out. We'll talk to y'all next week. And with that said, listen to the beat, because it's here. We're here. And if you listen very carefully and closely, you will hear what's really being said. Thank you.